Hi, everybody. I'm Maury Povich. On my podcast, On Par with Maury Povich, I'm going to sit down with the icons, the stars, and the faces at the very center of today's big cultural moments. With everyone from comedians Josh Johnson, Dan Soder, Leanne Morgan, to newsmakers Don Lemon, Joy Reid, Aaron Parnas, and so many more. So join me for new episodes every week, because nothing is off limits. Great conversations. They're always on par. Follow and listen to On Par with Maury Povich wherever you get your podcasts.
Back at it on a Monday here on 96.5 The Fan. We were talking about awards and what you could bet on and stuff like that. NBA Finals awards have been updated. Jalen Brunson, plus 100. Karl Anthony Towns, plus 185.
Wow, there you go.
Good for him.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey wherever you get your podcasts.
Man,
yep, he was plus what, 1300 going into the series, or plus 1100?
When was the last time we saw an athlete change their narrative like we were seeing with Karl Anthony Towns
this late into their career
too? Yeah, good point by you. Yeah, I mean, seriously, when was the last time we've allowed ourselves as sports fans to change our narrative on a player? Because we've talked about it a lot, and I hate this about sports, and I hate this about the people in our industry. They make a decision in May, and they never give up on that decision, even with a body of work of evidence that has presented itself. I think the three of us do a great job of admitting we're wrong. You know, we missed on that one.
Yeah.
We don't care. It's not that big a deal,
no.
Right? It's just
who
fun.
Gives a rip?
And Karl Anthony Towns is one of those guys who, this time last year, Knicks fans wanted him traded, didn't want anything to do with him. This guy sucks. And now he, next to Jalen Brunson, is going to be the second biggest hero off of this team when they end up winning it. And that's why I ask, like, have we kind of changed our narrative on him in a great way? Why haven't we been able to do that with so many other different people? Because as evidence, you know, presents itself, it's okay to say, man, I thought this in May, but here we are now a year later. I got to change my narrative on this, because this guy or this girl has gone out there and they changed their narrative of what they're presenting to us. And so I look at this Karl Anthony Towns thing and I just continue to think, man, I'm glad we're allowing ourselves as a collective here to change our narrative on this guy, because he's been nothing short of brilliant in the postseason for the Knicks.
Somebody says the only comparison they can give is Kevin Love.
Kevin Love's a decent one. I don't know if we were having these.
That
sorts
doesn't
of
do that for me. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like we all thought Kevin Love was awesome. You know?
Yeah. He joined
LeBron and won.
Yeah.
But I don't think we were like, oh, he's got all these issues keeping a team from winning. He was on a really bad Minnesota franchise.
Correct.
Minnesota teams.
Yeah. And I don't think he's in the same category as, like, it's New York, too, versus Cleveland and Minnesota and other places like that. But yeah, it's fine.
On a smaller scale, Geno Smith, Daniel Jones.
Yeah.
Sam Darnold.
Yep. Sam Darnold's another one. Are people embracing Sam Darnold, or are we still doing the let's wait and see? Yeah, he won a Super Bowl, but he had a defense type stuff. Or
some people probably are, yeah.
Yeah, but are people embracing Sam Darnold? You know, let's say, just for argument's sake, Jalen Hurts goes out there and the Eagles win another Super Bowl. Okay? Are we going to be able to change our narrative on Jalen? The guy's got two Super Bowls, two more than Joe Burrow, two more than Josh Allen, two more than Lamar Jackson. Like, will people change their narrative on him, or will they continue to have that same narrative? Because I do think it really is unique that everybody has done a 180 on Karl Anthony Towns. We've allowed ourselves to do a 180 on Karl Anthony Towns.
God, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar won the MVP at 37.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah.
I got to think that's the oldest one, because the oldest since was Steph. He did it at 33, then LeBron at 35. That was the bubble year, though, so I don't know how much credit he gets for that,
right,
but still won the MVP. Cat is 30 years old. I didn't know he was from Jersey.
Yeah.
Love to see that fifth overall pick back in 2014.
A lot of those guys on that Knicks team have those connections, and that's why it's so kind of special. You know, Brunson's dad is the coach. Karl Anthony Towns is from there. Josh Hart grew up rooting for, you know, the Knicks. There's some guy that roots for Rutgers his whole career. Why, I don't know, but there's a lot of connections to that team locally as well. That's why they're, I think, part of the reason, again, 53 years. But also, you got local guys on that team. Everybody loves the local kid, regardless of what city you live in.
Looks like the Knicks fans are out and about heckling the Spurs fans as Wimby shows up and somebody says, "Yo, Wimby, get ready to go golfing, buddy." I would do anything to see him swing.
Him golf.
Yeah, it'd be so amazing. Could you imagine?
Did you see the video of him walking into the garden the other night and all the ushers like, "You're tall, sugar."
Yeah. He's like, "Thank you. Hello."
Switching things over to baseball, we'll be joined by Josh Ferner in about an hour or so from now at 8:20. But the Athletics are showing interest in Chris Bubich to help bolster their starting rotation. That's per Bob Nightingale. Obviously, Chris Bubich, an all-star last year, been a little injured. I did hear yesterday that he's going to have a rehab start coming up shortly. Cole Reagans might have 1 to 2 rehab starts. Both those lefties coming back to your roster, but the names that I have heard that are on the trading block, maybe in the Kansas City organization, might be a guy named Daniel Lynch and a guy named Chris Bubich, as the Athletics are showing interest. So we'll see how these rehab starts go, see what Chris Bubich can do, because what I saw yesterday is the Detroit Tigers are like, "Hey, Tarek Skubal, let's get going, buddy. Ramp it up so we can get the ultimate package deal for you." As he faced, I think, 5 batters, struck out 6, gave up 2 hits, walked 1, as he's looking to kind of get back into the fold, as you would think with the year that Detroit has had, as in them and the Royals both 27-39.
Yeah.
Season's not going the way they wanted. Injuries obviously have plagued the Tigers. You could say the same for the Royals, but I would assume that Tarek Skubal is somewhere different than Detroit by the end of the year, by the end of August.
I mean, I would expect by the end of July. What's the trade deadline? The first
it's like
of August?
August 3rd or something like
something
that.
Like that. It's a weird date, but yeah. I would expect Tarek Skubal to be, I don't know, with the, I would have said the Mets, but I think the Mets, well, who knows what's going to happen this offseason, but I think the Mets are going to throw the Brinks truck at him this offseason, so maybe you don't give up prospects now, because look, the Mets aren't doing anything great. So who's going to be that 1-2 month team that rental for this guy, like we saw with CC Sabathia back in the day, where he went up to Milwaukee and had, you know, that little bit of a run there with the Brewers, and then boom, he was a Yankee a couple of weeks later. And so who's going to be that team that is going to get Tarek Skubal? That they're at Philadelphia Phillies, I've heard a lot of conversations about them. But if you're looking at the Royals right now, and Daniel Lynch is a guy that you could potentially trade, Chris Bubich is a guy that you can potentially trade, you have got to trade these guys. We can't let the last week kind of, you know, cloud what this team is. And it's a team that just isn't ready right now, not with a great infrastructure around it to move forward. And you need to build on that. MLB.com and ESPN both rank, and Baseball America for that matter, all three of them rank the Royals farm system in the bottom third in Major League Baseball. So you can't let a couple of wins over the Reds and the Twins kind of cloud what's going on right now. And when you have the opportunity to move players and stockpile some prospects for your minor league system, I think you have to do that. And I think you owe it to your franchise to do that as well, to try to get and maximize these guys that are on your roster. You can take a bad season and turn it into something good, and trading Bubich and Lynch and getting prospects back in return starts to set you up to kind of build this organization back up.
You've also got a bunch of injuries that have plagued the Royals over the weekend, even though they went 2 of 3 against Cincinnati, 3 of 4 against Minnesota. And yes, I know, listeners, we should have swept Cincinnati. But again, Caglione runs into the wall, gets right shoulder soreness. Mm-hmm. Salvador Perez was not in the lineup for 2 consecutive days as he dealt with a right thumb injury, which was sustained on a wild pitch that hit him on Friday. It led to some swelling, but the Royals are hopeful that by Tuesday he's feeling back to normal. That was from Q, and this all comes from Annie Rogers' Twitter handle. And then she reported that Bobby Witt Jr.'s knee soreness was something that progressed throughout the game, and that there was a long at bat in the third that didn't help. Said he was hoping to get to the off day tomorrow to rest, but the ache never wore off. He'll continue to be evaluated today and Tuesday and see where that goes. So big off day for him. Mm-hmm. I don't know how serious the injury is. It's right knee soreness. That could mean anything. I hope it's nothing serious. You need Bobby Witt Jr. to continue this sort of MVP season, as he is still currently the favorite at plus 140. Yordan Alvarez at plus 150. So it's getting close, as we'll have hopefully an MVP showcase this weekend. And a guy that you might want to take a flyer on through Aaron Judge being out is Mr. Ben Rice sitting at plus 350. Yep. And a guy that I would say your long shot is Nick Kurtz, who is plus 1,100 for the A's.
At the beginning of the year, we talked about this. Boomer Esiason bet his co-host $10,000 that Ben Rice would have more home runs than Aaron Judge.
Well,
I mean, if you're that co-host, you're going, Boomer, yeah. 10 grand. Ben Rice may do it this year because Aaron Judge is at what? Month and a half at minimum.
Can I do a payment plan?
Yeah. Pay this off. Somebody says Victor Wembanyama's golf clubs would look like broomsticks.
Yeah. Oh, no. I would say toothpicks more than that.
Could only imagine what that guy's driver looks like.
How far do you think he could hit it, though?
If he connected?
Yeah.
Oh, 300 yards.
No, you think he would. Okay.
Yeah, he's got so much torque. If he could just figure it
How far off the ball would he have to stand?
I couldn't imagine.
It's so weird.
The fact that he'd have to get his clubs tailored, which a lot of people do anyway, but for him being 7'5", I mean, it'd be double the length of my
driver. You're not walking into Dick's and going, hey, I'll take a set of clubs here, you know? You're not going to play it against sports. I mean,
when I worked at Champ Sports, every once in a while, we'd get, like, athletes that would come in that were, like, 6'8", 6'9", and wore, like, a size 15 shoe, and we had two of them.
Two.
Like, two. And a lot of times...
Each style or just two in general?
Just two total shoes that were 15 or more.
Wow.
So we'd have to, like, either special order or something like that, but it was mesmerizing when they would walk in and be like, how many size 15s do you have? Like, we got one in that shoe and one in that shoe, and that's it. And it's like, okay, I'll order. It's like, yeah, for sure. Coming up on the other side, a hell of a perspective. Injuries might have plagued the Chiefs, but excuses did as well. Here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty, brought to you by Golden Oak Lending. Do you need extra cash? Golden Oak Lending can convert your home's equity into cash in as little as 14 days. Let Golden Oak Lending cure your blues. Tune in to hear Royals insider Josh Vernier every Monday at 8:20.
Professor Vernier sitting up here, bloviating.
On your home for Royals baseball, 96.5, The Fan.
Rolling along on a Monday here on 96.5, The Fan. Mac Morey, Bob Fesco, Dusty Likens, all with you to start this week.
Real quick question for you guys. If the Knicks blow this thing, will this be looked at as the biggest upset then? Because at minus 440, they have an 81.5% chance of winning this thing.
Well, the Golden State Warriors would say, hold my beer.
Yeah, 3-1.
Fair point. That's a good one. But they were also playing against LeBron James, you know?
Yeah, up 3-1.
I know. Yeah. You're up 3-1. You got to finish that thing.
Crazy.
Yeah. No. But that was a memorable, obvious finals for so many different reasons. But just because of LeBron James taking over that thing, man.
Double question. Worst pass at a worst time, J.R. Smith or Wembanyama?
Well, J.R. Smith wasn't a pass. His was just holding the ball.
Yeah, his was just holding. Yeah, I was going to say Brett Favre when he was with the Vikings against the Saints in that championship game where he threw the interception. Or I'm trying to think of like great bad passes, if that makes sense. Passes.
That one guy, Tom Brady, who never did anything bad in the playoffs, he threw an interception late in the AFC championship game against the Colts.
That's right.
But that never happened.
No.
Did it
against the Chiefs.
Did it against
too.
The Chiefs.
If it weren't for D. Ford.
Yeah.
Would have had one touchdown, three interceptions on that game.
Yeah. Son of a gun.
Goat.
Speaking of the past, this comes from a Twitter handle named Fatty Patty.
No.
The one and only, I guess is what you could say, is the underscore. But puts up a lot of valid points, but a lot of it sounds like excuses as to why maybe the Chiefs haven't had the seasons ending the way they should have. George Karlaftis played with a broken hand all year last year. Xavier Worthy played with a torn labrum all year last year.
Can I pause you just one second on that? Why is the Karlaftis stuff coming out right now? Let's think about that. Let's think about why that got... I use the term leaked. They said it, but it was done with an intent.
Strategically.
Strategically leaked, right?
Yeah. Mm.
Okay? So is that for us to go, oh, I guess he was hurt all of last year. Now we should expect George Karlaftis to be better? Or are they using that as an excuse for why he wasn't great last year?
It's both.
Yeah, I think it's probably both.
Yeah.
He got a contract extension and then did not really have the type of year that maybe they expected.
Sure.
And then it's like, well, can you tell us why maybe George was maybe underperforming last year? It's like, well, the whole year he's playing with, a broken hand.
But why didn't we know that last year? Like, we know about injuries in the NFL seemingly. You know, obviously maybe it's a quarterback or something. You try to hide some stuff. This is a defensive end during a 6-11 season, right? It's not like you were trying to hide stuff for the playoffs or anything. So why let him play all of last year, too, on a broken hand?
At the time it happened, I think they probably were. But to your point, there were weeks during the season where that wasn't that case and that was he was injured and they could have let that out public and they decided not to.
Right.
So I don't have the answer for you. The only answer I could say to do it now, and again, that answer would have been the same months ago, so it's not really the difference there. But now it would be, well, all the discussions are going to start to ramp up. We're back in football mode, so we're going to start talking about each player and in positional units and all that stuff. And this will deter some of our negative George Karloftis conversations, and maybe that would be the point to do it. But either way, that they could have done that 4 months ago.
Could have absolutely done it during the season, too, when the negative... Like, look, I'll just say the same thing. Darren Peterson's situation is the same way. Like, when you're not honest about injuries, then the narrative becomes something that probably isn't what the narrative is at that point in time. So I'm going around a long story to say it's a big year for George Karloftis, guys. Don't you all agree, right? Like, okay, you had the banged up hand. They got you a bleep ton of help along that defensive line. There are no more excuses for George Karloftis. Like, he's got to go out there and play big this season.
Yeah, and it helps on the way. You know, you got Peter Woods, you got R. Mason Thomas, Chris Jones is obviously coming back. Norman Lott will be there. Gelati will be there. Now it's time to go be a veteran that can, you know, play at the level, the position that they think that he can do that.
What's
with.
He is a fourth year now, right?
Got to be so. Fifth.
Right. Well, he was drafted, what, 22, right?
Yeah.
So 22, 23, 24, 25, 26.
Yep.
Yeah, he's already in his fifth year.
Yep.
Yeah, there's no more excuses, man. It's like either poop or get off the pot. And so I appreciate them saying that he had that. But I think a lot, just like the Darren Peterson stuff, a lot of the negativity that was talked about these players could have been dissipated if we had just let people know, hey, this guy's going through it right now. He's got a banged up hand. Like, we talked to the next guy on the list, Xavier Worthy, torn labrum all year. We knew that, obviously, because you saw it happen. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't anything they hid from with him being injured or like that. The Karloftis one is very interesting to me and why it came out now, too.
We also know that Mahomes tore his ACL and PCL last year. Rashee Rice messed up his knee 2 years ago. Pacheco fractures fibula 2 years ago. Jalen Watson broke his leg 2 years ago. Hollywood Brown missed the whole season with a shoulder injury 2 years ago. Butker went on IR 2 years ago. McDuffie was placed on IR last season. But from what we were told, if they were in contention, he would have played
through
it.
He would have played, yeah.
Chanel, Rice, Taylor, and Watson all in on IR last season, some of which would have been in the same line of they were six and whatever. They weren't going to play for anything. No need to keep them going. And the wrap-up of the argument basically just says, Kansas City got much-needed rest this offseason. They're going to come back strong, mark my words.
Yeah, and I think that the much-needed rest is something that we have taken for granted. I feel rested, guys. I can't imagine what they feel like, right? And you know, being up at KU yesterday, it's all anybody wanted to talk about was the Chiefs and how good they're going to be this year. I think the excitement level is back for the fans. Obviously, seeing the Mahomes video has gotten everybody stoked because he looks like he's going to be just fine. People all over the country, my friends, are like, okay, you win again. You know, like, everybody's just resigned to the fact that he's going to be there and he's going to be fine.
Yes.
If they handle, like I said, like, you can have a bad year, but you got to take good out of that. Same with the Royals right now. You can have a bad year, but you can still take some good out of that. And if the Chiefs took all of the good that they possibly could out of that 6-11 season and they rebound and they've got, you know, 10, 11, 12 wins on the season and they're in the postseason, then we'll look back and we'll go, boy, that was a much needed, you know, break in all of this run just to give everybody that opportunity to have that extra month to recover, to take care of all of those nagging injuries. Now there are no more excuses. Everybody's going back healthy this year. Everybody's healthy. You got a great offensive line. You got running back weapon in there. You got the ability to do different things. You load it up on defense. The expectation is there for the Chiefs. And if they don't perform, people will have the same reaction that we've had to the Royals. Like, you told us you were going to be better. And you're not, you know, so the expectation now is there for the Chiefs. And I think they'll deliver on that expectation.
And a lot of people coming out saying we should have known something was wrong. He had a, you know, club or a wrap on his hand.
Yeah.
And then a lot of people are saying that it was a thumb injury in week 9 and that he was pacing to have a pretty good season. It's been so long. But again, like, did they undervalue this injury, or like, I don't know, like, where were people all year saying, hey, you guys know that Karloftis is hurt, right?
Right.
Like, I just figured it was like maybe something painful, but it turns out it was a broken thumb or a broken hand, whatever you want to call it.
However you want to phrase it, it was something like that. But again, guys have played with clubs on their hand for years in the NFL. You're like, oh, that could be used as a weapon, right? Hit the guy upside the head like back in the day. But, you know, no, but if he was hurt, fine. That was your excuse last year. You have to go out there and play big this year because there are no more safety nets right now for George Karloftis. They've surrounded him with great talent and he's healthy. And now you've had this time to kind of rest and get ready to rock and roll. So,
and when did
pressure's
they,
on.
When did they say the injury happened?
Somebody said on the text line, Dusty said week 9,
week
I guess.
Week 9, okay.
At least that's what somebody says.
No, that's, I mean, yeah. So it was 4.5, 5. He had 5 sacks after week 9. Yeah, yeah. He ended with 6. I mean, the math tells you, okay, it did have an effect. I don't know about the pressure numbers or anything like that. I don't remember us talking about George Karloftis through the first half of the season going, man,
really I don't remember talking George Karloftis at all. Now, to be honest with you.
To be fair to him, the rest of that defensive line, including moments that Chris Jones had that weren't the best.
Right.
Everyone on that defensive line needed to step up. But yeah, I agree. The rest, totally a huge factor. It's going to have a big positive effect on this team. But a lot of that stuff, you know, Jalen Watson broke it. He's gone. Hollywood Bramett, he's gone. Trip McDuffie, he's gone.
Right.
Leo Chenal, Taylor, all these guys
and that's
are gone.
Good. Get them all out. But it also does go to show you how, like, we get these injuries and how it does take an extended period of time for these guys to truly get back to being that 100%. But I think it was all about, like, last year, why this didn't work, you know? And
that's
so
fair.
You've eliminated all of this stuff right now. Like, they've had a great offseason, guys. They couldn't have done, in my opinion anyway, I know some people would like a wide receiver or, you know, two wide receivers or maybe a third tight end or whatever it is. But I mean, for what they were able to do with the budget that they had, with the resources that were available to them from ownership, they crushed this offseason as much as you can.
There was one person talking to George Karloftis.
I think George is going to have a 14 sack season.
Would love to see it.
Come on, Matt, this year, do it. Double down.
Please double down.
I think the injuries are there. I mean, because half the injury list, they went to the Super Bowl. They lost, but half those guys that they mentioned, the Chiefs still went to the Super Bowl.
Yes.
This year, yes, Xavier Worthy being hurt was an issue. Rashee Rice being suspended was an issue. Mm-hmm. But to me, the main issue was, you know, they just continued to go down the path of what they had been doing in years past, mm-hmm. challenging the league to say, well, you haven't shown any way of stopping it yet. Can you stop it now? And they did.
Mm-hmm.
Starting with the first week of the season when Herbert was able to get around and get a first down in Brazil.
Yep.
And then you see the Jaguars game. You see the staleness of the offense. And yes, injuries have happened, but maybe that's a good reason to have the offseason and get well.
Yep.
But maybe the other part about maybe the offseason being a long and more focused, drawn-out season that has been in the past is it's time for Andy Reid to take, you know, the dramatic approach at the desk and just throw everything on the floor and be like, okay, now we start from this.
Mm-hmm.
We have a running back named Ken Walker that we went and paid for. We have, you know, new draft
That's
picks.
Exactly right. I hope he did do that. Like, they should actually show a video on their Twitter, right, where he just cleans the whole desk off and puts this new playbook on there.
That's
that
what
just
Mac
says,
and I want.
That just says running plays. How, what, like, and Andy doing Andy things, you know? Like, you know he has that fun humorous side, as Stone Street was telling us last week with the Santa suit and all that. Andy's like, all right, hey, psst, get over here, Rob. Alberino, let's do this video where I'm going to throw everything off my desk and then put this new playbook down that just says running plays. People will go insane. It'll be the coolest video we ever put out. Let's get this thing done. People will lose their minds.
One word.
First name is Blake, and he goes on a cruise. He goes on a Caribbean cruise.
Katie Holmes.
No. Ah!
Are you listening?
What's your least favorite thing about working with yourself?
Body odor.
You get one word.
On the count of three, name your favorite dinosaur. One, two, three.
Velociraptor.
This is One Word on Fesco and Dusty.
One, two, three.
Oatmeal raisin.
That's right. It's One Word. Don't forget, the World Cup is getting ready to start. You'll see some great soccer matchups starting this week, I believe.
Woo.
The United States and Paraguay will play on the 12th. Because you can join 96.5 The Fan Friday, June 12th, the C-Dot and Rob broadcast live from the Peanut in Northland starting at 2. We'll be giving away coolers and other prizes as well for those in attendance. But hang out and watch USA play as they kick off at 8 o'clock. Our watch parties this summer presented by Truly, the official seltzer of U.S. soccer, and Security Bank of Kansas City, boldly local since 1933. But it is Monday at 7:30. It's One Word time, and it's brought to you by The Sand Trap. It is a great spot that has delicious food, cold drinks, TVs galore, and you can watch all your favorite sports teams from soccer to baseball to basketball to all of it starting tonight with Game 3 of the NBA. And the Sand Trap is located in the northeast corner of Blue Ridge and Holmes in South KC. And on a Monday, it's $9 cheeseburger and fries, dollar off craft beers.
Yeah.
All at the Sand Trap on Monday while you go watch those Knicks and Spurs in Game 3 at 7:30 tonight.
Love it.
Again, $9 cheeseburger and fries, $1 off craft beers at the Sand Trap, located in the northeast corner of Blue Ridge and Holmes.
Don't forget South to Tennessee. Ask about their bone marrow special as well.
Great vibe over there. Love it. Great pizza. Definitely go check out the Sand Trap.
What are you laughing at?
Bone marrow.
They got a great bone marrow entree there.
All right. Hey, you should get a bone marrow entree if you go to the Knicks game because it costs $10,000 to get in. Josh Hart's pissed about it. He says, I wish the tickets prices weren't as crazy as they are. One word on game three tonight and the ticket prices.
Nuts. It's crazy. I text my friend Evan. I said, you going tonight? He goes, yeah, section 306. I go, what'd you pay? $17K for the pair. Obviously, he's joking, you know, but I think he's joking. I don't know. I mean, you know. It's funny, you know, to hear the players say all that, and they realize what people are paying to go see them. This coming after Shaq blasted a bunch of NBA players over the weekend for, you know, not living up to their money and not putting on a good show. I hope this puts it into perspective for every professional athlete that people are willing to spend all of this money to watch you play. It should put it into perspective. Now go out there and play like people are paying $17,000 a night to watch you play. Who was it that said, I don't know if it's somebody's first game, I want to put on the best performance I can every single night?
Yeah, bizarre is a word I can think of. How bizarre. Courtside, behind the team bench, 45,000. On the other side, 53,000 to sit behind the basketball goal, 18,000. To sit midsection, you're looking at 24,000, 15,000. To sit up in nosebleed, you're looking at $8,000. Yeah. To watch this sporting event in the Garden.
Wait till game four if they win tonight.
I saw a really good strategy real quick. Spurs fan paid for game five tickets. You better hope there's a win in New York, because if there is a win, those tickets are going to go up.
Yeah,
you
massive.
Get them now.
It's good. Yep.
Very good strategy.
Yeah.
Don't know what they paid. Half that.
I mean, but essentially what you're doing is you're just funding it right now. And either way, you're either getting your money back.
100%.
Or you're selling those tickets.
Or you're selling it for double, triple. Yeah. That's a great idea. Great investment. How about this? Raiders, they're catching strays at all times. This is our guy, Steve Levy.
Hey there, Steve Levy with Eric Johnson. We come in from just down the road here in Las Vegas, where the Aces are playing in anticipation of tonight's Game 3 of the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, Vegas just seems to have the winning formula. Four titles in the last 4 years between the Aces and the Golden Knights. All they do is win here in Vegas, it seems.
No mention of the Raiders, of course. That's it. We'll see you tonight. Eastern.
One word there.
Truth.
No mention of the Raiders.
It's funny, though. All they talk about is winning here in Vegas. Meanwhile, every person's losing their ass at the blackjack table, too, right? Hey, the Aces and Golden Knights, congratulations to you guys. Now, the Raiders over here, that's a different story. I love it. Truth.
Yeah. Facts. You're right. You know, no fake news there. No wrong numbers there. Just, of course, the Raiders have yet to win nothing. But, again, they're rebuilding. They had a good offseason. They had the number one overall pick in the draft. They got Kirk Cousins. Time will tell. Mm-hmm. And then when the A's get over there, we'll see what their narrative is as well. Because their stadium's sick.
Who do you think is going to win a championship first, the A's or the Raiders? Seriously, because the A's can't hang on small market nonsense anymore. Okay? They're going to have to go out there and put a real product on the field. And they could own that division.
I'll go A's. Yeah, Raiders, I've got a long, long sample size of ass. How about this? Speaking of ass, Taylor Swift's chair going up for auction that she sat in from the Cavs ECF game, Game 3. One word.
Stupid. I mean, but it also shows you people will pay for anything. They're auctioning off her chair. They're auctioning off Travis's chair. And I think Ben Stiller's chair as well.
Market. There's a market for everything. Yeah. Somebody's going to pay for that.
Yep. Fantasy football punishment. This went viral from Barstool Sports. This is a great one. This fantasy loser, 10th in his league, and he's having to go out in June trick-or-treating until he gets 10 pieces of candy or 10 pieces of really anything from house, whether it's a can of soup. One word.
Hysterical. And I would be willing to do that today. Like, if you walked around with a video camera, me just knocking on doors asking for candy. First of all, how many people answer now?
I think if you saw a guy coming up to your front door in a costume, you'd be one of two people
in
like,
June.
Absolutely not. Or you'd be like, all right, I got to know the story.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think you'd open the door. You'd be like, all right, why are you in a Winnie the Pooh costume in June, brother?
Yeah.
Finished dead last, my fantasy team. I got it. Or my fantasy league, I need 10 pieces of candy. I'll be right back.
Yeah,
just give him everything. Just come into the house, take what you need.
I saw the guy, the K, I suck at fantasy football and sat up in the big, you know, up in the nosebleed with each sign with a letter on each one. So my one word would be innovative. We're getting more and more creative with this rather than just going to a bar wearing a toilet seat around your neck that said last place fantasy football winner.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. So it's harmless.
Yes, exactly.
It's fun. It's creative. All those one words.
Yeah, I think it was great. Watching the video of this guy knocking on doors, getting candy in June, hysterical. Like, right up my alley. It's so good.
Royals win 3-4 on the weekend. They end it 6-5 dub over the Twins. Bobby Witt Jr. does not finish the game with some knee soreness. One word, Bobby Witt Jr., knee soreness.
Yeah, that's scary. You don't want to see anything like that happen, even during a season when you're not winning. But again, you're a season and you're not winning. If there's anything that is even remotely close to being any sort of damage, it's okay to let Bobby Witt Jr. sit out, because you don't want something minor to become something major in a season of which you're not playing for anything. So let this kid rest, please.
Yeah, Monday would be my one word, because they're off today. Mm-hmm. So couldn't have come at a better time with Salvador Perez banged up, Caglione banged up, Bobby Witt Jr. banged up. It's, you know, not good. But Monday with the day off definitely can help with that.
Not a day off for KU. Yesterday's game suspended due to weather. They're going to resume that at noon. Third inning. Mm-hmm. What is it? 8-1
It's 8-1
8-1 right now. Uh-huh. One word on KU baseball resuming and having one last shot. They got to win.
I will say tension. And the reason I say that is because as soon as that first pitch was thrown last night, I was there at the game, just for people to know. You could feel the tension in that stadium, man. Mm-hmm. And I looked at my buddy Jim and everybody else is around. I'm like, postseason baseball, man, there's nothing like it, because every GD pitch matters. Mm-hmm. And it is so intense. And like, I don't follow college baseball. Who does? But as soon as I was in that stadium, and as soon as that first pitch was thrown yesterday, you could feel the tension of everybody on the edge of their seats watching every single pitch. That's the beauty of postseason baseball.
I would say the one word would be fortunate. Because now you can put all that to the side.
True.
You had some time to relax. Yeah. It's 8-1 It's not over. You got a chance. It's not great, but it's not over.
But it's not over.
It's not over.
I read today they have something like 21 or 22 comeback victories this season. So there we go.
Well, the next one would be today.
They've also lost like 18 in a row to Oklahoma or something. Like 17 in a row to Oklahoma. Crazy number like that. But yeah, you got the rematch. Not the rematch, but the restart today at noon. And then if KU wins, then they'll play the championship game, if you will, after that.
Friday, it starts in Omaha.
It starts in Omaha over the weekend, yeah.
This is funny. Yesterday, baseball really leaned into the 6-7 because yesterday was June 7th. This comes from the Colorado Rockies scoreboard. Famous people who stand exactly 6'7" tall. Number one, actor James Cromwell, Babe in Succession. Peter Crouch, former English football player, one of my favorites. Aaron Judge, New York Yankees outfielder. Peter the Great, Russian Tsar and Emperor, late 17th century and early 18th century. And then Mitch Kunstein, former roommate. Good guy. If you know, you know.
I was dying when I saw that.
That is one word brought to you by the Sand Trap. It's a great spot. Delicious food, cold drinks, TVs galore to watch all your favorite sports teams. It's located in the northeast corner of Blue Ridge and Holmes in South KC. And don't forget, today on a Monday at the Sand Trap, $9 cheeseburgers and fries and $1 off craft beers as well. Well, Mac was introduced to Sergeant Hartman of Full Metal Jacket. It is Mac's summer movie review. We get to hear what he thinks of Full Metal Jacket on the other side here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
This is Fesco and Dusty.
Brett Veach has the most underrated chest I've ever seen.
On your home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan. Fesco and Dusty is brought to you by Golden Oak Lending. Do you need extra cash? Golden Oak Lending can convert your home's equity into cash in as little as 14 days. Let Golden Oak Lending cure your blues.
All right. As the summer continues to roll along, we continue to bring you some interesting ways to get through the summer, as we'll have our summer story sessions. Eric Stone Street was last Thursday. We'll let you know as the week progresses who will be this Thursday. But also, every Monday will be Max Movie Review, as he is going to start watching more and more movies to get caught up on some movies that maybe we've seen. And we decided to go with Full Metal Jacket, the Stanley Kubrick film.
Started off hot, baby.
Oh, hot.
Started off wow.
Hot. The first 45 minutes of that thing Dusty and I talk about it all the time. At least once a week we talk about that movie, about the most intense 45 minutes that you'll ever experience in a movie this side of Saving Private Ryan, you know?
Yeah, a different kind of intensity than Saving Private Ryan.
Yes,
because I love Saving Private Ryan. One of my favorite movies, definitely my favorite war movie. And I'll just, you know, start off, wouldn't put it near Saving Private Ryan. No offense. I loved it. Really good movie. I liked it. I wouldn't say I loved it. I liked it. Good movie. Not a great movie, in my opinion. That's not because it wasn't cinematically fantastic, because Kubrick had a couple
Stanley Kubrick.
I mean, my gosh, there were a couple shots that, like, were meant so much about the plot of the film or that character. If you just paused it, you could, like, you know, dissect it for 10 minutes about what he's meaning just in one shot. So cinematically, obviously an incredible film, but just wasn't my cup of tea in a lot of ways. Loved the first 45 minutes. Honestly, could make that a short film and have that be a 5-star short film in and of itself.
I am with you 1,000% on that. That is a great kind of pull by you, take by you, because that's kind of the way that I think. I think Dusty thinks that way. Like, that, the first 45 minutes of that thing, man, it's a completely different movie than what happens afterwards.
I'd like to I'm going to rewatch the second half.
Mm-hmm. You should.
Because, not that I didn't enjoy it, I think there's a lot to gain and a lot to gather. There's a lot going on there. And I think another thing is, I when that movie came out, I was thinking about, if I had watched that, if I was alive when that came out and I was with people who were in Vietnam watching that movie, that would hit a lot closer to home, knowing more people who had been there. I really appreciated at least what I felt like Kubrick was trying to do and kind of gain a lot of those messages, you know, bring a lot of that messaging that those guys had, a lot of those feelings and emotions, a lot of experiences those guys felt back home through the film. So I felt like that was a...
And I think also, too, for some of the younger generation out there, the Vietnam War was obviously a very controversial war. And my dad, you know, talks about it all the time when the draft happened, and his draft number, he was like 3-something. So he was way down the list. Thank goodness his cousin Jimmy went over there, was killed. And we just saw his name on the Vietnam War Memorial last week when we were in Washington, D.C. And so you look at stuff like that, and it puts it into perspective. And so for a guy like me who's pushing 50 right now, when that movie came out, I was dealing with a dad who was younger than me, who saw his friends go to Vietnam, who saw his cousin killed in Vietnam, who that was their life. I mean, think about being 18 to 22 years old, and then think about having your friends off at war and fighting a war that nobody in America agreed with at the time. Nobody wanted to be fighting that war. And so there were a lot of protests. It was nasty. We all know, you know, what the 60s were like. And so when those guys came back from Vietnam, they weren't treated great here in the United States. And they're still struggling with that today because they went and fought this war that nobody in the United States wanted to be fighting. And so they were looked at as lepers, for lack of a better term, when they came back. And it wasn't their fault. The troops didn't do anything. They were drafted in all of this. And so it just hits so many just different cultural things of what was going on at the time. And a lot of those people that movie was geared for either were over there or had friends that were over there or lived through that time of their life. And it meant so much to them, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely two different films because the opening is obviously they're getting their head shaved as they get prepared to go to boot camp and they're playing Goodbye, My Darling, Hello, Vietnam. Yep. And then you have Arlie Ermey, who was a former gunnery sergeant of Vietnam. And I believe, as we can get into Cliff Clavin's notes here, I believe that when Kubrick decided to go with him as the leader, he said, I want you to do exactly what you went through. I don't care this Hollywood. I don't care these are actors. Be what you were. And you see that kind of play out as he goes out there and he's like, yeah, there's no racial bigotry here. Like, everybody's equally worthless. And then he calls the African-American soldier Snowball. And you're like, wait, what? And it's like, this is what they did. Like, this was how they prepped these kids, literally kids going into a foreign land that they knew nothing about. You know, obviously the Viet Cong were under, you know, tunnels and popping out in random spots. And then the second half of the movie, you kind of understand why a lot of these guys were mentally just checked out on life. One, you had all the drugs that they were doing in the jungle with heroin and whatever it might have been out there.
Anything to get you through that crap, bro.
Right. And then you had, you know, the end scene when they're in the bombed town and they're getting sniped and they're like, where is this coming from? And they figure it out. And then you see when they go and ambush the room, it's like a 15-year-old girl.
Yep.
And you're like, that's what some of the things that happened. And then you go back to these guys being kids and in unison to finish out the movie, they're singing the Mickey Mouse theme song. And you're like, why are they singing this? Because this is how they could connect. This is how they were all like, let's go to our happy place, right? Like when I was a kid and I had nightmares, I'd sing It's a Small World After All over and over and over my head to just go to bed and put my brain to sleep. And then you watch like the scene in the helicopter where the guy's like, get some. You're like, that guy's sick.
Yeah.
But those guys existed. Whereas like the other guy in the chopper is like puking and like can barely do it. And he's a photographer for Matthew Modine, who plays Private Joker and all that sort of stuff. And then you have guys that go into it and like they're doing their, you know, announcements of what they're going to be in the war. And Matthew Modine is communications. And like, he's like, communications, you trying to be a writer? Sir, yes, sir. I want to write and take everything that goes on in this, but you also might have to put your helmet on and grab your gun.
And it was just very interesting to me to watch that movie because, like, everyone who watches that, the first 45 minutes, you're like, holy cow.
Yeah.
The jelly donut scene, the bathroom scene where he's like, I am in a world of blank. And he just starts going in as a drill sergeant, in. And then, obviously, you know how that scene ends up. And then it's like, boom, okay, this was boot camp. Now you're into the war.
Now you're into the war.
Yeah. I wonder how many times, and I'm sure there's probably stories written about this, they've had to stop filming on that set because – he took it too far as the drill sergeant. Like, we're like, all right, dude, like, you need a deep breath here. Like, was he able to go from gunnery sergeant to actor? You know, was he able to make that transition? It's like a football player when they go off the football field. You got to keep that violence on the field. Can you make that transition to being a normal person off the field? Sometimes it's very tough. So was he able to make that transition? Like, Kubrick's like, all right, dude, you need to calm down a little bit. Do you think he's yelling at Kubrick and like doing that whole thing? I would have loved to have been behind the scenes
that
on that.
Crazy.
But that's why that first 45 minutes was so damn effective, because they didn't go out and get an actor. They went out and got a real life person and said, you do you. And boy, did he do him.
And it has your typical, like, Kubrick film, like the green floor with, like, the red walls. And then, you know, he did The Shining, right? Mm-hmm. So he's got the red carpet in that movie. You watch 2001 A Space Odyssey. That movie has a lot of typical Kubrick stuff in it as well. Just overall, really, like, polarizing film. So I'm glad that you got that one out of your way.
Yeah. No, it's good. And now that I've seen all three of his main movies, which is good, too. So can start kind of marking off more Kubrick films
now. It's my rifle, this is my gun.
This is for shooting, this is for fun.
It was intense, man.
Private Pyle!
How are you when they
Are you from Texas?
Are you,
theirs.
Yeah, Private Cowboy is from Texas. How tall are you, Private? 5'9". I didn't know they stacked. What'd you think of the scene where they put the soap in the sock?
Oh, God, bro.
Man, that's,
I have tried to help Private Pyle, but I have failed.
Yeah.
Now you will soak in the punishments that Private Pyle has. You brought it, you eat it. On your faces, ladies. Mm-hmm. And then, all right, there's the message. And then he's just gone.
Yeah,
you
broke
see his
him.
Eyes and everything.
Oh,
like
they
that.
Broke that guy. When you see that shot of him with the crazy eyes,
it's
but that was like that. That's as real as it gets, you know.
Yeah, it was really, really well done by that Private Pyle guy.
The hell that these guys, these GIs went through in Vietnam and boot camp, and it was.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Again, they didn't sign up for this. It's not like they said out of high school, I'm going to ROTC or I'm going to go to to West Point or Annapolis or someplace like that where you're going and you're doing this on your own. These guys were all put there because the government told them to be there. And so now you've got soldiers fighting a war that have no interest in being over there and fighting and doing all of this. How well do you think that's going to go?
Somebody says, I'm a Marine veteran of the wars in the Middle East, and Full Metal Jacket is one of the most accurate war films of all time. Boot Camp is so accurate, and the war stuff is too. Arlie Ermey was perfect.
Yeah, he was great casting, and you start to think about people who were cast in roles in movie history. It's one of the best of all time when it comes to casting.
Now what you need to do is watch Saving Silverman. Because Arlie Ermey is in that as well. And they pay homage to his character in Full Metal Jacket.
Okay.
R.I.P. to Arlie Ermey, who's no longer with us. Coming up next, Bob was at KU yesterday, plus Manny Machado spoke about analytics here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty, brought to you by Golden Oak Lending. Do you need extra cash? Golden Oak Lending can convert your home's equity into cash in as little as 14 days. Let Golden Oak Lending cure your blues. Your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
When the stakes rise and the lights get bright, that's when you find out who can really swim. Deep Waters is a new UFC podcast from CBS Sports. Every Monday, myself, Dean Thomas, alongside with legends of the sport, Chris Weidman, Jorge Masvidal, and Dustin Poirier, bring you inside the octagon like no one else can. Deep Waters, new episodes every Monday. Watch on YouTube or listen on Apple, Spotify, and everywhere else you get podcasts.